ました。エリシアガンジ。
Hi, I'm Neil and welcome to the Crosscast. In today's Crosstalk, we look back at the finale of the National Trophy in Shrewsbury and reflect on how poorly we all did in our podium predictions. We're going to dive into the pits with the final round winner, Guus van der Meer from Bomb Track Cycling, and we're also going to dive into the pits with Hugh Williams. And in the last round, we look forward to the National Championships in Gravesend, being organised by Hugh and the team down in Cyclopark. And of course, we're going to make our predictions of all the winners. We saw so much action across all the categories over the weekend, right down all of the fields over pretty much every race. However, there is one incident that I'd like a bit of clarification about, because there was a conversation that I overheard, Matt, when I was walking past the stage yesterday, and all I heard was your voice saying, "Yeah, it's underwater chess, and you play it with breathing apparatus." I thought, I'm just not going to ask, but Matt, are you taking up some new sport?
I'm not, no. No, there are two stories behind this, and you can believe which one you want. One version of the story about the underwater chess is that I was actually talking about downloading podcasts, and if you have a specialist field, if you are into your cyclocross, you might want to download the Crosscast, and that might be one story. The other story that you might choose to believe is that there's a competition at every race for me to get into the commentary a random phrase and saying, and this time's random phrase and saying was underwater chess. You take your pick, it's one of the two, but I'm not going to tell you which one.
Oh, that might explain why I heard on the mic a bit later on then.
Underwater chess was probably the least likely thing you actually would have done at Shrewsbury. Driest Shrewsbury ever.
I did see someone who was riding looking like an underwater creature of some form, with Bruce going along the straight, mouth wide open like a basking shark, trying to get in as much of the oxygen as possible. Bruce, I actually thought you were going really well yesterday. How did it feel on the course?
Yeah, I redeemed myself from a few previously poor performances. On the course, it was brutally fast, I guess. At points, I felt pretty slow, particularly on those off-camber banking sections. But luckily, even the front guys of the race were going pretty slow along those sections there. I think actually, whilst I didn't, it was one of those courses that I rode and I didn't feel particularly inspired by. Obviously, we normally see it being a bit of a battle against the conditions there. And actually, once you get racing it and sort of get up to speed, it rode really well. And I think Dave Miller did a good job to fit a really action-packed course into what was, 6 minute laps. It's pretty impressive. But I'm in the action, and I was there from first thing in the morning watching the under 14 boys racing, and that was really exciting to watch as well. It was really good to see sort of that depth of talent lower down the age categories. Matt, you were there all day. What was your sort of pick of the weekend?
Oh, I was there all weekend. It was a great way to wrap up what's been a really good series this year. We've had a real variety of courses. We've had some fantastic action. And right from the VET 40 women's race, which was pretty action-packed from the word go, the 50s was brilliant. The VET 50s, all those age category races on the Saturday really teed up then the Sunday. And I don't think there was a category where there wasn't a podium position decided by what happened in the racing on the day, on the Saturday and Sunday. And on a compact course with the pits nice and close, with everybody all together, it provided a really busy atmosphere. The riders were being shouted all the way around, and the riders did it justice as well. I think it was deceptive. Like you say, there was fast sections and slow sections, and those slower sections, although everybody went slow, there were a lot of people with some big crashes and some big mistakes on there that cost them a lot of time on the way through, and all the way from the very first race to the very last race of the weekend. How people handled the mud, the slippiness, the hard pack, the tarmac, the transitions between them affected where those titles went and affected the podium places throughout the day. So great racing. I thought a good ride by you, Bruce. I think You went off like a rocket at one stage. I thought, oh, is Bruce back? Was he listening to his own press about being on the podium here? Well, he's absolutely flying.
Yeah, I was. I think maybe I think a few people saw my tweet yesterday about my first lap legs. And, you know, if I was able to stay where I was on that first lap, I'd have finished top 15. It would have been a great day out. I managed, to be fair, I got a great start. Luckily, I was like four rows back. And by the first corner, I was sixth. So, you know, if you have a good start, that really puts you in a good position for later on. And it was one of those courses as well, which I think played to my sort of skill set, on the slightly faster and really technically sort of challenging at high speed. But it was really good.
And I think, Matt, you put before, when you were down on Friday, you say, this is the best Shrewsbury course ever. And I agree, actually. I've raced there loads of times, and I thought that the course, it was excellent, and I didn't quite know what to expect, but they just put so much in such a short space. Yeah, if you look over the section where those cambers are, I counted across, and if you drew a straight line across, it was of a length of about 30 metres, you would have gone over 8 lanes of course as it weaves backwards and forwards. And it doesn't, you know, it's not been done in a just because we could do it type of way. All of those have got something about them. There, it could be the road, it could be a difficult camber, it could be coming into hairpins. I love what they do. And one of the downsides that we've always had at that venue has always been the difficulty for the pits, and they've experimented in so many different ways. And, you know, I think this time the pits were the best I've known them. I mean, it's still not easy.
I'm glad you said that, because I have got half a rainforest destroyed when we were sketching those out.
Yeah.
And trying to work out how we could move them in. I got a call from Dave and in the week before going, I'm stood on site and we're still struggling. You've got a picture in front of you. Draw me something and send me a picture. About 50 sheets of paper, £30 worth of ink later, and a whole load of pens and crayons later, we came up with a bit of a design, and it's basically that blueprint that's gone out there. I think it's going to be interesting. If that was muddy, would that course work? Would that pits work?
And I, as I say, I think it's the best that I've ever seen there. You know, if you go back many years when they tried it on kind of the two separate pits sort of adjacent to each other. Yeah, so they've tried so many different ways. But I think it could work. On the first day, I think the muddiest part of the whole course actually was there was that walkway. It wasn't actually on the course itself, but the muddiest part of the venue was the walkway between how you got into the pits from, say, where the stage area is. So I wondered how that was going to hold up that section more than I was worried about the rest of the course, to be honest. It's easier to handle the rest of the course, but when you're dragging jet washes through mud, that just isn't fun.
It definitely isn't. I think there's a definite medal to be earned by the pit crew.
Last time, I think we all made some predictions, and at the end of the show today, we're going to make predictions for the national champs. And let's hope we do better next week than we did this week, because none of us even mentioned first over the line in the two elite races. So, Fionn James, we should have done. Because Fionn does go well on that type of course in those types of conditions. I was so impressed. I almost felt like it was a return of Fionn that we've seen previously. She looked comfortable, and I was expecting her to just not last the distance with Anna. But then it was the other way around. It was Anna Kay that started to drop off.
Yep, definitely. Really interesting race. I talked to Fionn after the race, and apart from the fact that she said, thank you for not mentioning me, because whenever you don't mention me, I always go well. So apparently I'm not to talk about her ever before a race, because she always does better. We were actually saying she's got herself a coach. Here's an ex-rider, and she's going well with that. She's taken some time off, bearing in mind that she's a full-time university student studying at one of the big two in the country. She does a great job of combining that and still being a phenomenal athlete. And I think, yeah, we all missed a trick, but if you're betting, do you bet on that outside bet that can potentially turn up? I mean, she'd been entered into all the trophies and had only ridden half of them. Only row three, But you know what? When she does ride, she's awesome. And I thought she wasn't looking good on the technical sections, but talking to people further out on the course than I could see, they were saying she was riding some of the banks, the cambers, better than anybody else. The first section off the tarmac up onto the banking, she was going through visibly quicker than anybody else during the race. And I think she deserved the win. I think Anna Kay, bit tired. Bear in mind that she'd ridden the day before and got what was an awesome result there. I think it was seventh. To come over overnight and race, she said her aim was to defend that under 23 jersey, the green jersey. That's what she did. And I think maybe it was pushing it too far to go beyond there. Good to see Beth Crumpton racing and being, I think, very smart. Once she knew there was no threat from Anna to take away the title overall, I think Beth was playing that very smart and potentially just sitting back a little bit, doing what she needed to stay just in the points score, just enough points to put it out of reach of Anna and her teammate, Fionn, taking the victory. And I think that was good team tactics. I think Story worked that very, very well. Good to see, though, junior riders up there doing the business. And what happened? Flynn comes along and absolutely slaughters everybody.
That was, I thought that was a fabulous ride by Anna Flynn. Because she didn't start that far up. It was almost what we expected for the junior rider running in third. It was Josie Nelson, who was having a really good ride early on. And then she just couldn't keep it up for any longer. And then we've got so many others in that top 10. We had two Wadsworths, and as well as Josie Nelson, and Harriet Harnden. She wasn't even in the top three.
Yeah.
Nope. She wasn't even in the top three. But
conditions.
Not just conditions. She's a good road rider, is Hattie. She's fast.
Yeah.
On tough courses on the road. I think, whether it's because she's been training hard, because she's done this big block of racing over in Belgium and on the continent over the winter, whatever it is, it wasn't her day. And Flynn, I've watched Anna come through from the under-12s, the under-14s, the under-16s, into the juniors in the mountain bike racing. And she is the most focused rider ever. Come big races, she comes good. And I think she really put a big statement of intent for next weekend. For sure, for sure. And I thought, interesting to see that change over. As Neil's just said, loads of juniors in the top of the standings, loads of under-23 riders up in the top of the standings. And our senior riders, I think, had a hard time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if we go through the results and the series results, overall we had Fionn winning, and then Anna Kay in second and Anna Flynn in third. And so one senior, one under 23, and then one junior rider in that top three. And then overall in the series for the senior women, it was Beth Crumpton, as we know, who took the title with Anna Kay in second and Fionn James in third, all three of whom were riding for Story Racing early in the season. So perhaps no surprise there in the overall. It's been between the three of them pretty much throughout. If you exclude the younger riders who have been mixing it up there. In the under-23s, it was Fionn and then Anna Kay and Sophie Thackray that we've not mentioned, who had an overall top 10. And, of course, she also finished third overall in the series. So Sophie, she's been in there or thereabouts all year and has been consistent, I thought.
Yep, definitely. She's been consistent. She's scored points in every single round of the National Trophy. Most of the others have only done 5-point scoring. She's scored in every round. She's been consistent. But I think the writing was on the cards that she was in danger of losing third place in the senior series. And I think she ended up in either fourth or fifth place because of this 5 rounds counting out of 6. But she's had a great season and she continues to progress. We're continuing to see her getting better and better. And she's got a big, big race program over the cross because she's over on the continent. She's racing here. She's probably got more miles and more trips across the Channel Tunnel than we're going to get after Brexit. So, you know, she is absolutely flying. loads and loads of miles. She's travelling loads of miles, and yet she's still pulling out these performances week in, week out. And a great ride by her. But the junior riders as well, great results there. It was a shame not to see Katie Scott defending that series overall. Katie of Hargrove Cycles Montezuma's not able to take to the start poorly, and it did mean it left the door wide open in that junior competition for Josie to ride. And I think when Josie realised she wasn't going to be up there in the win overall in the race, she then thought, right, overall series, I just need to finish now in a good position. That's what she did. But behind her, lots of changes and lots of new faces coming up.
Yeah, one of the things which, if you don't know the riders, it's easy to miss there. But there was a real tight race with Wadsworth, Flynn and Harnden all together on the course. And this was the race for second, third and fourth in the juniors. They were right on each other's wheel, exchanging places for probably this whole second half of the race. And it was the one I think we'd have all expected to be at the front of that group, who was at the back of that group with Hattie Harnden. So that's going to be interesting coming into next week. But you know, Maddie Wadsworth, what a cracking ride from Maddie. You know, I was really impressed with Maddie. She seems to be going really well. The other rider who we haven't mentioned, Becky Priest in the top 10, solid ride again. Becky seems to be coming on. I don't know where she will, how she will go next year. I'm going to be really interested to see how Becky goes next year, because she's kind of been knocking on the door and I think all the opportunities are there.
Definitely, she's had a good season this year. Best trophy result, I think, previous round in eighth, and this time round it was a ninth or a tenth this time round. And I think she's getting consistent. I think she's going to get a good result at the Nationals, but I think let's see what happens next year. Remember, she's a great mountain biker. She's a really skilled mountain biker, and if she continues racing through the summer on the mountain bike, I think we're going to see a good summer for her, which could then set her up for the following cross season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, her teammate from Hope Factory Racing, Annie Simpson, she was nailing that, the bank after the start. She was railing it around there, and that's where you can see the experienced riders. You were talking about Fionn being noticeably quicker. Well, certainly at the start of the race, when I was at that corner, it was Annie Simpson. She was the one who was taking that corner with so much confidence. Poetry.
Definitely a skilled rider. Remember, she's a rider who's been on a national podium plenty of times before, and yet is still got the speed to go win rounds of the Women's Tour Series, the Matrix Series as well. So she's actually a great road rider, great crit rider, a good mountain biker, and a great cross rider. And it shows you the strength and depth in our women's racing when Annie, who is a regular podium rider and is multi-talented, comes in. And I don't know what the result was in the end, because we were racing to get all done before we moved on to the men's race. But she wasn't in the top 8-10 riders. I think she's probably about 13th in the end, and that says just how strong that women's race is and how many of our juniors can mix it up now with the more senior riders. The junior men, I think they're almost as flip-flop and as almost hit and miss in terms of form as we're seeing in the seniors and in the under 23s, but of course they have a different race, so it is a little bit different when it comes to the final round of the series. And I thought it was a great way to kick off the second day of racing. The junior men's race was absolutely frantic going into that first corner, and Lewis Askey's performance, he went from the start into that first corner. By the time they're coming down the tarmac behind the start, he was already gapping people, and he set that intent very, very early. It was, I'm going, stay with me if you can. And I thought it was interesting to watch Jensen Young, because Jensen's had a heavy race programme, but he had that series nailed. He had that confirmed with a round to go. He didn't need to turn up. He could have sat and watched at the sidelines and still come and picked up the trophy. And he could have been one of any 8 or 9 riders in the end who could have gone 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th places. So it did make for an interesting race behind Lewis. And I think it was a bit kind of Van der Poel-esque that we almost forgot Lewis was off the front by, I think it was about 50 seconds at one stage, because the action behind was really, really interesting, watching those riders fighting it out. And the future is very bright. If we get maybe 50% of these riders moving up, it'll be great.
we were talking earlier about Fionn being delighted that we hadn't tipped her. I spoke to Toby before the race, Toby Barnes, and he, well, I had tipped him, and he kind of went, when I said, I tipped you, and he was, yeah, I know.
You've cursed him. You've got my problem now. That's yeah, what it is.
And it seemed like he had the opportunity there with McLeod not taking to the start. Toby was still behind, but he needed to pick up a decent number of points. He needed to have a good result, and it just didn't happen on the day. There were all of the other under 23 riders were on the start, and it was their day. Who did I tip last time? Yeah, Dan Tulett.
I have to say, Neil, that was a really good call. Dan Tulett as a tip. Suddenly, Dan is coming further forward. Cameron Mason sitting on his wheel, taking his turn on the front. Those two together in that race hammered up. At one stage, we had four riders. We had Barnes, we had Matt Taylor, we had Dan Tulett and Cameron Mason. These four youngsters were absolutely hammering. They dropped Grant Ferguson, the defending seniors champion, and they set off as a pack in pursuit of the race leaders. Eventually, Barnes faded. He dropped back. Then, coming off the back went Matt Taylor. Matt had a slip, I think, and I think he had a puncture on the way through. And that left the two. And then there was a problem for Dan. And he locked his front wheel on that drop down onto the ledge that's been formed on the banking. He went over the bars. That opened a gap to Mason, and Mason took advantage, and he hammered home. And it was really interesting to see he took that opportunity. Bearing in mind that Cameron Mason last year sealed the series as a junior. He's moved up to an under 23. And he nailed it. He's certainly coming good at just the right time in the season. I did feel very sorry for Mr. Barnes because he lost that series by 1 point in the end. 1 point from the rider who was there. So he had to basically be one position in the under 23s higher this race to gain that point. And that is gutting. But that is also bike racing. And we know he's had a great season. And I think if he looks back and you said to him, you're going to win Macclesfield Supercross and you're going to beat the defending national champion, you're going to be up there in these internationally ranked races, he would have taken that. And I think he'll get over his disappointment. I think it's hard coming into next week because he's on a downer after that. And he shouldn't be. He should be thinking about the whole of the season coming into the national champs.
We did go through a period in the sport where only a few years ago there really wasn't that many under 23s riding, and we were sort of wondering whether there'd be this big gap in the fields because you've got sort of that aging population. But actually, you know, whilst Craigie still doggedly works his way up and drops me, yeah, there's some really good talent lower down the age categories, and that's great.
Look at who was up there at the front of that senior race. Count up the number of under 23s in the top 10. Count up the number of vets. Take those out. There's not many. There's not many senior riders that can mix it with the best under 23s now.
That's right. But at the front of that field, we none of us picked Goos van der Meer as being the outright winner of the race. I think that might be because he wasn't actually on the list that we saw, the very early edition of the start list. Otherwise, we might have had another opinion on that. But Goos van der Meer, Dutch rider, and he races for Bomtrack, but also he is a key sponsor in Hunt Wheels, a British company, of course. And so, to be honest, I'm surprised we don't see him over here more often with that tie-up with the British company. So hopefully he'll be over here a bit more. I did actually dive into the pits with Goos van der Meer as immediately after the race. And so let's go into the pits and catch up with Goos. So welcome to the pits on the Crosscast. Brilliant ride today. Really nice to see you. How did you think it went?
Well, if you take the win, it already went quite well. But from the start, I had a really good start. I think I took the whole shot or like half around the corner. And then I knew I had a lot of traveling in lately. So I knew like from the beginning, I don't have to overdo. Yeah. So I was tried to keep riding with my mind, and I was getting a gap already in the first lap. But then you just have to be smart, and Jorben van Tichelt closed the gap like in the second or third lap, and then the thing happened that I was already a little bit afraid of in the beginning, because I know like Jorben is fast, Ian is fast. Those guys are teammates, and Jorben came to my wheel, took over, and I noticed like the pace got down a little bit. Then you look back a couple times, see Ian Field coming back. I was like, oh shit, yeah. I don't want to be in front with three guys, two teammates and me. And then I took over again, tried to put the pace up a little bit, because like I just didn't want Ian Field to be there, because that wouldn't be so good for me. And then in the end he came back, so we were the three of us, and I was like, okay, there's at least one guy who doesn't have to pedal anymore today. So I just waited, because I knew if I attacked too early, it will probably be a little bit too early, because I lost Wednesday, I raced in Switzerland, in Milan, and I just got that race barely out of the legs, because I drove 8 hours home on Thursday, and I was on, I think I was at home at 5 o'clock, did one easy hour spin in, packed my bags for the plane, and I flew in Friday morning here to England.
Yeah.
And then we drove here on Saturday with the Hunt guys, and I knew, don't go too early. And then we were in the front, and all of a sudden I was with Jorben. I just kept on his wheel, and then he kind of like was gone. I didn't know if he had like a mechanical or something else, but all of a sudden
I was going to ask you, because there were the three of you, and then next time we saw you there were just two of you, and Jorben came through really a long way behind, but you also don't know what happened, and you were right there.
Well, he was riding in front of me like at that, I'm just in a podcast pointing at something, but there was like an off-camber part at the course, and he was riding in front of me, and all of a sudden he just like stops and like he stands still, and was like, I think something already had a mechanic or something else, and then it was like done, and I was like, well, I'm not going to wait. So I just kept on going, and then I was together with Ian, but Ian was already on a gap behind me, and I think I made like a really big difference, like that I could keep sprinting on the tarmac sections, and the most important thing, I rode the off-camber part up all the time. And I just saw him walking there all the time, so I knew like if I pick out the points where I'm faster than him to keep hitting that, and the rest like keep my mind in the race, then I can make the gap bigger and bigger. And the last 3-4 laps, it went from like 8, 10, 15, 20, 28 seconds, and then I knew.
And next Sunday, you racing in the Netherlands?
There's national championships in Heibergen. It's the course a couple of years ago was the European championships.
And
we'll see how that goes. There's like another starting field than here in England today. So just looking forward. It's a completely different course on a big hill, a lot of sand, a lot of running. Because I heard from the other guys, like Shrewsbury is like always running. So I flew in with Lemus tires, like like really heavy gear. And in the end, like maybe for the diehard fans, I rode with the Grifo in the back and baby Lemus in front.
Yep.
And I rode 155 bars at the back and 15 in the front. I have to say it was, I got a feeling it was a little bit too much air pressure. If I look back now, we probably ride 135 in front and 140 in the back, but that's afterwards. And I think it went really well, and just was today really important to keep your head in the game. And I knew like physical, I'm not that well anymore, but also with bad legs, you can keep riding smooth, and that's what's really important on this course today.
Well, Gustav, thanks so much for diving into the pits with us and the Crosscast. Hope to see you back in the UK again, and all the best next week for your own national champs.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and I will be back for the Dirty River on the 13th of April.
Oh, fantastic. Good to see you there.
Yeah, all right, thanks
cheers.
A lot.
Cheers. Bye, bye.
So great to hear from Goose there. And I must admit, although I saw what he'd done in terms of results prior to the racing, I was one of the few people who knew he was going to be on the start line. I have to admit, I didn't have him down for race victory even then, because I thought we were going to see Jorben beat him. But I thought Goose did a great ride. I mean, he looked like he really wanted it, and he was very, very happy on stage. But Jorben, quite the reverse. He drifted off and, in fact, had to go to hospital and couldn't be on the podium. And at the moment, on Monday, no news. As soon as we know some news, we'll let you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we heard from Goose, even when he was riding in that group of three, he was suddenly disappeared. So even Goose didn't know what had happened there. But certainly from where I was standing, every time he came through, he kept on... Well, it looked like he was looking at his watch, but actually that does make sense. It was a heart rate monitor. Hopefully, Jorben will be back... back next season now, won't it? But at the front of that race, when there was the Neon Velo twosome at the front, I was wondering if there was some tactics coming in, possibly even with Urban, who was trying to cover everything that Goose was doing, and Ian was just kind of almost sitting back a bit. I don't know what you mean. Obviously, Bruce, you didn't have an up-close view apart from the first few laps. But Matt, did you think anything like that was happening?
I was watching it and watching it reasonably carefully, and I think, realistically, I think there was some team pressure on there, because if you look at the potential wins, it's 7 wins in a row now for Ian Field in the National Series, the National Trophies. That's 7 titles. That's an immense number. Team tactics, only to help Ian win. And realistically, no matter what your team do, you still got to have the legs, you've still got to be smart enough, and we know Ian's done that. He's got that, and you can see what it meant to him on the stage afterwards, and backstage he was elated to have it. And he's done what he set out to do at the start of the season.
It didn't all go his way on the day, but I think he was very comfortable, and potentially once he knew he had the series in the bag, may have been saving himself for next week, because next week is going to be pretty tough. I did see Pete Hargroves, who was giving Ian Field a lot of support. He's not riding for Hargroves anymore, and of course Hargroves did have some serious wins over the weekend, particularly with Helen Patterson in the Vet Women's, who was the most delighted rider of the weekend, I think. it was good to see Pete Hargroves giving Ian some support as well.
Yeah, he was stood next to me, and it made me think, if you look at the front of the men's race and the under 23s, and you look at our class cross riders, how many of them have come through the Hargrove Cycles machine? If you add Hope to that, you're probably getting halfway through the race field. Half of the race field have done that. He has been responsible and looked after the team with some absolutely class riders. Both Tulets, you know, current world champion Dan, who's been a medalist. You look at Ian Field, he supported Ian for a long, long time, and it was great to see Pete stood at the side shouting Fieldy onwards, shouting on Dan Tulet going onwards, and it shows you these people who've got a passion, who put the money where their mouth is, and they set up these teams, they put all this hard work in, they put in the money, they look after the riders. They're absolutely critical, almost as critical as the race organisers and the people who are putting the racing on, because without them the riders don't get that sort of support. And his experience, he was watching it, and some of the comments that he put out, I can't repeat them on the crosscast, but they were very insightful indeed, that's for sure.
The other race that was happened over the weekend was the one that we did a very quick preview of last time in Brussels, the Vrije University DVV, and really all we talked about there was the terracing that I was saying, I'm not quite sure how they're going to ride up and ride down this. Well, actually, maybe the terracing wasn't quite as tricky to ride down as I'd remembered it. But riding up, it still looked pretty hard to me, but the men's race, they seem to be doing it.
To be honest, it looked a punishing course. I think I think from what I was listening to in the commentary, on the Dutch commentary, they were saying that it's one of the most elevation gain heavy courses of the season so far, just on the amount of meters of climbing. My big take home was seeing my former idol Lars Boom back in the saddle, riding actually really well, top 10 on the first lap. He even managed to get up to, and obviously a slight slide back there, much like myself, so it's good to see that he was obviously copying my tactics from the weekend. But no, it was a really interesting course, which required the finesse and skill of a mountain biker in some sections, but the punchy kicking sort of side of the course was, you know, rewarding riders like Katie Compton, and obviously we saw some interesting results in the women's. Van der Poel was as much as anything an inevitability, and after 8 minutes, as I was saying to these guys before we started recording, I kind of these days, if I've only pushed for time, I kind of know that I'm going to get a great race to watch with the women's, so I'll watch the last 10 minutes of the women's race because it's not going to be for certain then, and I'll watch the first 7 minutes of the men's because I know roughly what's going to happen for the first for the last hour of it. So really interesting.
Season summary in about 6 words by Bruce there.
I think it's time for us to move on and to enter the last ronde. So in the last ronde, we always look forwards, and today we've just got one event. This, of course, is the National Championships in Gravesend, down at Cycler Park. This is the one where those stripy jerseys are determined. So I'm really looking forward to it. Another key thing this time is the Helen 100, where Helen Wyman has pulled together some sponsorship, and she's actually paying the entry fees for 100 women who are under 23s or younger.
It's actually over 100.
Gonna say.
It is a lot more than 100, and we've got to thank the Fifth Floor and all of the sponsors who have worked to get people in there and to get the sponsorship in there and to stitch it together. And we shouldn't estimate the amount of work done by Helen and by Steph in stitching it together. It's not just a matter of a bit of processing. All of these things take a lot of background work, a lot more than anybody would ever estimate, including I think Helen and Steph when they first started off. And it has grown, and I think it's great to see in their own way both Helen and Nikki both doing something for Cross, putting a lot back in. We've got Nikki doing the Medita camps, working closely with Matt Ellis, working to bring people over and the camps in Belgium over the winter. And you've got Helen getting all these riders in, getting them down and generating riders. Absolutely awesome. And I think they're all going to enjoy themselves. I mean, it is a great venue. We're there for the national trophy. And I think if you were going to get riders in, if you're going to give them a good taste across, doing it down at Cyclo Park is the place to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And in terms of the actual venue itself, Hugh Williams has put a lot of work into developing that venue. Matt caught up with Hugh. They dived into the pits. So let's chat with Hugh and just get all of the lowdown on the very latest from the person that's actually built the course.
So I'm back down in the pits once again for the Crosscast, and we thought, who better to talk to us about the National Championships, the course and Cyclo Park, than the man who has had a little bit of a hand, or should that be a free hand, in putting the course together. Welcome to the pits, Hugh.
Thanks,
how are you?
Guys. Yeah, very well, thanks, very well. Great to be here at Shrewsbury in the dry for a change. Never seen it like this, but yeah, interesting.
Yeah, a final round of the National Trophy. And you ran around to the trophy last year at Cyclo Park. I guess that was a really important step before you ran the National Champs.
Absolutely, yeah. So the progression for the National Championships, which is next week at Cyclo Park, has been kind of local London League races, which in themselves are quite big events. They asked us to put on a regional championships, which we did. The next step up from there was National Trophy. And this year, in preparation for the Nationals, they asked us to redo another regional championships, just so we could trial kind of the new areas of the course. So it's been quite a logical sort of progression through the various stages, culminating next weekend in the highest status race we've had so far, which is the National Championships.
And in terms of progression, you talk about moving on, developing. Is that developments to the course? What can people expect when they come down to Cyclo Park if they've not been there before?
Yeah, I always had in my mind the idea that every time we went up a level in racing, we'd try and make the course, the expression I was give it more teeth. So basically, over the years, each time it's taken a step up in the status of the race, it's basically had a few more teeth, i.e. a little bit more challenging, a little bit more difficult. So obviously, with this being the National Championships, I wanted to make it the hardest, most challenging it's been so far, and I think it is. Based on what the weather does, it could be extremely challenging or a lot less challenging, but theoretically the layout of the course and the features make it the more challenging it's ever been, certainly.
And in terms of the National Champs, we have a massive range of riders. We've got 2 days of competition. Yep. How do you design a course that can cope with people who are riding in age category races, but also with the best riders in the country, our elite riders who are going to be there, and then deal with the fact that we've had the driest winter ever, and even here at Shrewsbury, there's no mud?
Yeah, well, basically, it's all about the planning, isn't it? And particularly at Cycle Park, we've actually got some very, very strong alternatives in place, which we can put into place if, for example, the under 14 boys and girls can't get up some of the severe bankings, which you've seen from the previous trophy we did there. We've got a wet weather option where they don't quite go up so high this year. So I don't know, you obviously remember Comedy Camber because you put the name to it.
Would that be my... That's not my fault. Maybe I might have to take the blame for that one.
Whilst that was an awful lot of fun for yourself and myself, more so than the riders in many cases, it was also a case of like massive log jams of riders because of the severity of it when it was wet, which we clearly don't want in bigger category races at the national championships. So we decided to go straight down those bankings and straight back up again. And that means we can obviously go so far up, so if some of the younger categories cannot physically make it up those banks because it's too wet, we've got a much softer option for them. Put them back in, and an extra area down the far end for lap lengthening if Mr. Pidcock and Mr. Field and Mr. Tuller decide they're going to be on full bore that day and are going round a 7.5 minute lap in 6 minutes.
And so, is that something that's always key when you're designing the course? You stepped up, you stepped up, stepped up. Is it continental feel? Are you looking to make it feel like a continental race for those riders who, the names you mentioned, are some of the favourites obviously in their categories, and we're going to see a lot more continental base riders coming back? Is it that kind of course, or are we going to see a UK style course?
I would say it's definitely not a UK style course. I wouldn't be as presumptuous to say that it's a full World Cup standard course. I would definitely say it has features on it which would not look out of place on some of the really good World Cup courses. So yes, definitely it's not racing around flat fields like we sometimes get in this country, and that's not to disparage anything that the organisers do, because I think they do a fantastic job with what they've got available. What we have available at Cycle Park is an awful lot of technical stuff in a very small space, so you have to go through a lot of the features in very quick succession, which keeps it a lot of fun and very challenging physically and technically. So I think that's going to kind of decide what kind of rider is going to do well on the day. It's a mixture of highly skilled technical stuff and good endurance riding.
And when we get to the course, we've got a different start finish, so we're going slightly further up the tarmac, are we? And the finish line maybe a bit nearer to the centre.
So basically we've got an awful lot of technical stuff in place to again rise it up to this standard of national championships. And obviously being a long narrow venue at Cycle Park, what we saw at the trophy, what we learned from that was crowd control is the biggest issue. So we put a number of features in place to address that. So the national championship standard British cycling barriers, for example, act as natural crowd control along the finishing straight. So we won't get those crowds of people wandering down from the kind of main building down the finishing straight to the old start area. It's now outside the cafe at the top of the course, so a bigger spectator area. I was very mindful that even though the race finishes in that area, which is exciting in itself, there's not an awful lot else up there to look at. So basically we put a flyover in just over the fence. So from that area of the course, you can actually see the finish. The start is where it was. The riders will pile through as a mass group on the first lap. And then the second time around, they'll quickly turn right and go over a big flyover section through an off-camber technical bomb hole section, loop back around on themselves and come back down the other side of the fence on the finishing straight. So any spectators lining the finishing straight, which obviously is a really big deal for television and for British Cycling's purpose, the riders on the other side of the barriers can then turn around and they'll see the riders coming back, having been over the flyover section, coming back behind them. So it's a really good sort of spectator area.
And we're still retaining the big bank that we went up that was really, really popular, the sort of the big charge in and then try and power up to the top and then a turn and a corner round. Is that staying in?
So the big bank run-up, as it used to be called, kind of reflects the way that cyclocross has improved over the years in the UK now, because even though under 14 riders are riding up it quite regularly. So we are going up it. Whether it's going to be a run-up depends very much on the weather. Some of the old footholds from even previous years have started to come through, which kind of makes it more of a kind of juddery experience, even when it's dry. So some people actually find it easier to run up anyway. It's definitely in. I've made it more technically challenging because, I don't know if you remember the trophy last year where you were standing, they kind of went over the top onto a flat section at the top and then dropped down into the off-camber. So this year, just before they get to the top, they actually turn into that off-camber straight away.
So we're turning off the bank, easy section at the top to
recover. No easy section at the top.
You've got to go around onto the camber. So that's a big step up, one of the things you're talking about in terms of making it harder.
Absolutely, and the key thing in that part of the course is when they make that left turn into the off camber, you're at the highest point of the course, you can see the finish line from that point. But in between you and that finish line is a 350-metre tarmac sprint, but also a really, really long, technical, slightly off-camber descent. So you can imagine two or three riders coming through for the win in that section. They can see the finish line, and it's maybe slightly damp on that descent. It's when they're going to get back on, if they're running across that off-camber, and how much risk they're prepared to take on that descent before they hit the tarmac and the long sprint. So if there are races coming down to a final sprint, that's going to be super exciting for all the fans up there, and even the spectators up there can see the finish line from that point.
It sounds really, really good from a racing point of view. And of course, lots of sections around the back. I've seen one of the sections a bit like the oopsie whoopsies we've seen at Loenhout. Neil's favourite phrase, which obviously, you know, only Neil can use. But we've got a similar section. I think you call it the rhythm section on the way through.
Yeah, so you probably remember from the trophy as well, but we did previously, that long draggy section down the back of the course, which went in a straight line up along the fence to get back to the pits area, was only ever intended to be in there for lap lengthening in the dry. And obviously, again, taking it up a level for national championship status, we always wanted to get rid of that and put something more interesting in. And we were down there kind of planning different stuff, and we had a little bit of help from Kelvin and Ian, the comms, previous to the regional champs this year. We just discovered this new area with the ground staff down there, which I'd never seen before because it had never been cut. It was like scrubland and scree, and we call it the Hidden Valley because it's literally kind of in a bowl on its own, and it's surrounded by the Cycloparc's mountain bike trail. So basically I looked at it, and although the trail is single track, it is wide enough to cut it to like 4 metres on both sides. So we're going to very briefly take the course in there, make a massively technical section, which includes this, what we call a rhythm section. It's almost like a natural pump track area. So I would say we've got, like Loenhout had about 7 or 8, I counted, and we've got 5. Definitely tall enough for the boys who are confident enough to style it up there, and the girls obviously, if they're prepared to take that kind of a risk. But what it really does, it gives you a technical challenge in the way you think about things like tyre pressure. So for example, you're only on it for 15 seconds, but it is rock hard and there are stones coming through it. So you'd think, well, do I risk a slightly different tyre pressure just for that 10-15 seconds when the rest of the course is quite soft? Or the alternative could be, okay, I'll run my tyres soft, and if I'm rimming out on those stones down there, you can actually ride on both sides of that trail on the grass, still get the pump action effect, but you're actually on a slightly slower surface. So it really does add a technical sort of decision-making process to your tyre choice based on the conditions as to what you do through there. And it's so, then come, and just before you enter the pits there, it then drops down into an absolutely massive bomb hole, like straight in, straight out. Must be about 20 feet elevation change down and up. And you're right into the pits from that point. Yeah. So that entire long, draggy section down the back, basically, which is no fun at all, has been replaced by a super technical, really good fun section.
Sounds really, really good. And in terms of tyre choices, if you were coming down to the race, you've got 2 sets of wheels to bring. What should people bring?
Extremes. And I mean that without being glib in any way. Yesterday we had the Live AWOL girls down there training. I kind of had a straw poll of what tyres we would use in those conditions yesterday. File treads 40 psi, no question. It was stupidly dry down there at the moment. I've never seen it like that. We've had 2 weeks without rain since the regional champs. It's dried all the moisture up from there. It's firmed up all the ruts. It is literally like road racing on dirt at the moment. However, we know the surface there is built on chalk, so although it drains that quickly and dries that quickly, it would only take 40 minutes of rain with a race going on for that to change absolutely entirely, and you'd be on full muds.
So anything really is extremes then. We're talking full muds or files. That is, it is either end of the spectrum.
And anything in between. Seriously, I really could not recommend any given tyre until you see the conditions on the day.
That's going to mean it's going to be some serious thinking going on, which is what we want. Cross is a thinking sport. It's not just about the engine. It's not just about the speed. It's about the thinking. Any other tips for people coming down? Anything that they need to think about when they come down?
Information sheets will be sent out in the next sort of 5 or 6 days about how people can get around the course. Plenty of spectator lines and pit crew access points will all be sent out or available via British Cycling and Velo UK websites. So there will be an awful lot of information about how to use the venue practically and get around, which will take a lot of the aggro hopefully out of your race day experience. But it's obviously down to the rider and the support crews to actually read those, have a good idea of where things are before the event actually happens, and it'll just improve your experience on the weekend, obviously.
Well, looking forward to the racing, and we are looking forward to see what you've come up with this time around. We're going to let you get back out on to the course here at Shrewsbury, and of course see just who is going to be in the running for the racing. Thank you for coming in the pits, Hugh.
Yeah, thanks very much. I look forward to seeing everybody next weekend.
So thanks, Hugh, for diving into the pits. I think it's going to be really interesting, and I love what he says about bring all your wheels, all your tyres. It was all going to depend on the weather. But one point that he did make there is, which I've been thinking about, is if you kind of unwind it. I think we talked about this after the Irvine National Trophy. If you kind of unwind that course from the finish line, I'm wondering where the decisive move has to be made. Because if it's you've got that big bank, well, what was the run-up, and then you've got technical sections, it could be actually quite a long way back in the course where you're going to need to be in front in order to have the advantage coming onto that final sprint. Matt, can you unravel the course? Where do you think you need to be making those final moves?
Well, when I'm looking at it from a commentary point of view, I'm always trying to work back when we're at practice early on, where those riders are making those key points. Where are people making mistakes? Where are people looking under pressure? If you come backwards through there, it is going to be a long cambered descent, slightly off camber, but basically cambered down to the tarmac and then a long sprint. So you're going to need to be in the right position coming onto the tarmac, but you've got a lot of tarmac there. So if I was behind somebody going in there, I'd still be fairly confident I could outsprint them on that tarmac. However, anyone without a sprint is going to have to go on the hill, because as you come up that hill, you're going to turn left before the top, and that hill is wide. Now, do you go wide on the right-hand side with a view to cutting across? Have you got the power to ride up it? So much is going to depend on the conditions on there. If it's a run-up, can you block somebody coming down? And it's all going to depend on that right-hand bend, that camber, down to the tarmac. That's the last possible moment. Personally, given the risks that far from the finish, no possibility of changing the bike. If you come down on that descent, it's game over. You've lost your position. You're not going to get it back before the finishing line. So I would want to go early. And my prediction is we're going to see a lot more early attacks, and no one will want to go in the small group coming onto that bank. So go backwards from there. It's going to be the feature before. And that's coming around the side of the pits. It's coming around the hurdle areas. That's where somebody will go for the last time. Nobody will want to try and drag people together into the finish. So when Bruce is coming in to get his hands in the air, taking the victory in the senior race, then of course, Bruce, we do expect you to go early, mate.
I can only expect, that's my main thing. I mean, do you know what? Given that big drag strip coming into it, I could see bunches forming and people staying together until the last minute, which means I think we're going to have a really, really exciting elite men's, women's, juniors. Oh, wait, everyone's going to have an exciting race because it's one of those few courses where it actually could benefit someone holding it until the last bit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think I wonder if we will see on that very last technical section, you know, what we used to see at Shrewsbury in those days when it used to be muddy there, you know, where on the bank, when that was just before the finish, where you'd see the riders come into that bank, and effectively the only strategy was, if you're behind, do whatever is the opposite of the person in front of you, because if that person in front of you slips off, you don't want to get tangled up with them, and because you're not going to overtake them on a section like that. And I wonder if we'll see some of that, where people will be looking at, if someone takes the A line, you take the B, you know, where A and B could be two alternatives as you go through. Over the whole weekend, there's a lot of racing going on, starting at 9:30 on Saturday morning, with the practice starting at 8:15. So those people who are working on Friday, not a lot of time to get those lines nailed for in that Vet Women's race early on, or in fact any of the races in that before after that first practice on the Saturday. But it starts off with the Vet Women, then we've got the Vet 50 and Vet 60 races. Then we get into the girls, then the boys, and then the last race on the Saturday is the veteran men at 2:30. So lots of action all the way through the day.
I don't think anything is nailed on in any category. There's no firm favourite on day one. Add to the fact you've got 537 riders down for day one. That's as many as we see on a weekend at a national trophy sometimes. I think there's going to be some fantastic racing. I wouldn't want to put money on anybody in any of those. I've got lots of equals firsts all the way down for my favourites all the way through those. And I think great way to kick off the racing. Great way to kick off the weekend. And I reckon we're going to see a lot of the riders who are racing Sunday coming in on Saturday and watching just to see how that course rides. But the Saturday practice is only for riders on Saturday who are racing.
Yep.
Can't go if you're racing on Sunday.
And I think that that's a good point that you make, Matt, particularly for those riders who are racing later in the day. I think this is really important that you go and look at the course, you know, do a course walk while the other races are on, you know, not only to see your teammates and to cheer people on and to enjoy the racing, but also have a good look at how the course is holding up, what lines seem to be working, what lines don't seem to be working, or perhaps there are lines that you think you could make work. On the Sunday is when we get to the junior, elite and under 23 categories. So there's four races. There's a junior women, junior men, and then there's the elite and under 23 women and the elite and under 23 men. And before we start to get onto our predictions for these races, just to say that in the elite and under 23, we need to remember that if the elite podium are all, if the elites are all under 23 in the top three positions, then the elite podium will be the same as the under 23 podium. So they aren't separate. There's under 23s and elite and under 23, which is the whole race, which is the one start.
Yep. It's really complicated if you haven't seen it before, but essentially we've got the race on the ground, the race that you see unfolding in front of you in the men's and women's elite races. That is how it will be called for the title, the main title. There is a separate under 23 category, only eligible for those riders who are under 23. They can compete and take away that. So you could see, as Neil says, the same three riders on the top step, the second step and the third step of the podium in both races. And it does mean that our senior riders for the first time are now racing against under 23s in the national championships in the men's race, and I think that's going to make a big, big difference to how the races play out, particularly in the men's race. The women's are used to it, they're not in the men's.
I completely agree, though it does make me a little bit disappointed, because my chance of getting a top 20 at the nationals has been massively made a load harder now. And I was really all season looking forward to trying to do that. I mean, I said it at the start of the season on the crosscast, and being realistic, I'm going to have to pull something better than the last weekend out of the bag for that. And
to be honest, if an under 23 is fast enough to take it, why shouldn't they take it in the trophy way? If they've got the legs, they've got the lungs, they've got the tactics, that as an under 23, why shouldn't they be there taking the senior title if they can beat the seniors?
So where should we start? Who do you think are the ones to watch in their junior women?
Anyone could pretty much win given the day. No, there are some key favourites for me. There are some key favourites from me. If you look at Wadsworth, who had a great race, she was going really, really well. I expect her to be up there. It's almost on home turf. Always, the Wadsworth family always seem to pull it out when it goes big. When it's a big event, that family know how to race hard when it's a big event. And I think that's going to be potentially one of our riders. I don't think, though, she's going to get a medal. I honestly don't. And I think the other rider who could be disappointed is going to be Katie Scott. Katie Scott, who has been racing for GB, who has had a storming season, a rider I really like watching racing. I don't think she's going to get a medal either. I have to admit, my top three doesn't include either of those two riders, and yet they could quite easily be up there and win it. And yeah, I think that says a lot about the depth of the race field in the junior women, which is huge. I mean, the top three for me, third place, Hattie Hamden, defending champion. I don't think she's going to win it. Sadly, because it's always good to see somebody who's represented us well being up there, but I don't think she has that pace yet. I think we're going to see Josie Nelson in second, but my money's on Flynn, because the entire Flynn family, all the time I've known them, on road or off road, have pulled it out of the bag at the national championships, and they've got a collection of stripy jerseys already. So my money's on Flynn for the win, Nelson for second, Harndon for third. Bruce, what do you reckon, mate?
I think you're right. I think Hattie is just is not going to be in there in the same way that we would potentially see had the course been slightly different. Maybe play to her strongest skill set, which is really powerful riding, especially on a course that's particularly sapping. It's so hard to call, isn't it? Feel I'm going to keep the riders you've gone for. And I think I think Hattie's me second, Flynn for the win, and then I'm going to go in third. I'm going to get the Hart, why not? Flynn, Harden, Hart.
For the first time this season, we're seeing junior women riding on their own, apart from what we saw in Lonehout. So I think that is going to change the racing. I'm actually going to go Nelson, Flynn, but I'm going to go Baker for third.
Whoa. I wouldn't bet against you. I think the point you make is right. These riders generally race with other people at cross. But do remember, most of these riders are multidiscipline riders.
Yep.
And they ride on the road together. They ride at the cross. They ride on the mountain bike together. They ride on the track together.
Okay, so that's the junior women. Junior men. Who wants to go first on this one? Bruce, why don't you go first?
Oh, wow. It's a great way to make lose friends. This is so hard, isn't it? Because you've got a world champion in this category. You've got people who've already podiumed at a World Cup in this category, all fighting in the same thing. I think it's going to be Lewis Askey for the win. Tullett in second place, primarily based on the fact that Lewis Askey has a fantastic sprint, and I think that they could ride together for the majority of the race. And I think that you'll actually have a very evenly matched group for much of the race, with Jensen Young in third.
Okay, interesting. I think it's going to be a really, really ferocious race. 66 junior men racing, and out of those 66, I've got 15 highlighted for being in the top three potentially on my sheets. That's how close I think it will be, and I wouldn't want to bet against people like Tom Cousins for Zappies. He is a good road rider, he's good in a bunch, he's had a great season, his best cross season. People like Ollie Draffen is good, but I don't think he's going to keep it to the end. We'll see. I reckon Birchill is going to be there or thereabouts, but he's not going to be in it. And I think we've got to remember, we've got Jamie Johnson and Rory Maguire coming down from Scotland, both from Lizzie's Bike Shop, bearing in mind they have both been national champions at other disciplines, and they are both potentially national champions. But you put them up against the big guns, put them up against the big guys. Young, playing it smart, this weekend at Shrewsbury, third. World champ, getting beaten in second, because it is home turf for Mr. Tulett. But I think he will be into second. I'm not sure he's recovered enough from the injury he's had. And I think Dean Downing, his coach, is going to be smart. And I think he may well say, well, it's good if you get it, but let's look at the Worlds that's coming up later on. Lewis Askey, I would never bet against him. He's my number one spot for that, because you put him in a sprint, you put him on the road, he will kill himself to get to that finish line first. And the gap he put in to the rest of the group at Shrewsbury was huge. He's got a good winter. He's your man. Neil?
Okay, well, What I feel strange here is that last year I tipped a first-year Jetson Young, and we've seen him win the national trophy this year. But I'm not going to tip him for this race. I feel that Askey is on the form of his life. And if he can keep his head, I think this could be a really good ride for him. He's had some really big results in the past year or two, so I think that Askey is going to be our winner. And then I've got at least three that I want to put into the next two positions, and I don't know which ones to put in. I think I have to put in Jetson Young, and I'm going to put him in second. Tulip in third. But there are so many others. I think Pidcock even could potentially be up there on a technical, difficult course.
Joe was one of those riders I've got highlighted, but I'm not sure at the moment. If he has a good day, he could win it. If he has a bad day, he could not finish it.
Okay, what about the women's race, the elite and the under 23 women?
Neil, would you like to go first on this one? Good luck, mate. This is a tricky one, for sure. Yeah.
It is a real tricky one. For the elite women, I am going for Bramier for the win. Second place, Kay. And then third is the one that I'm struggling on. I think third place, I'm going to go for James.
Bess Crumpton has been having a storming season. She's been riding as strongly as I think I've ever seen her. She was calm, calculated. She knew what she wanted to do. She set out for that goal. She's riding for Story Racing. I think she's got a point to prove as well, because I don't think she's still got a team for next year. And I think she is going to work hard, but I think she's going to be up against Helen Wyman. Helen has not raced the whole season in the usual way. She's had some time at home over Christmas and New Year. She didn't race this weekend. She has been putting in the miles. She's been putting in the training. She's defending champion. What do we think? I think she's third. I think it's going to be Kay in second. And I think it's Nikki in first. I've spoke to Nikki about an hour ago on the phone. And it's quite interesting because Neil says, oh, this is what she's been aiming for. When I talked to Nikki, she was saying, treat it like any other race. She's flying in on the Friday. She's flying out after the race. It's another race in the programme. Treat it like another race. She thinks she's on good form. She's going better on faster courses. And with a new coach that she's got, she's changed coaches. She's got a cyclocross specific coach. I think it's all going to come together for her. And I think Kay's good. Wyman's amazing. We know that. All the rest of the race field are good. But Bramier for the win.
I'd love to disagree and say something controversial, but I think it's too hard to pick anything other than that. I think the competition is so strong, but the last few weeks have really been telling us to where riders' form was at coming into this weekend.
And so would you have a different listing for the under-23s? Obviously, some of them have to be different, but
I think Kay, obviously, because I've got a second in the race overall, that means she's going to be our first under 23 rider. I've got Wyman after her. And directly behind Helen, fighting with Helen all the way, is going to be Fionn James. And then I think Sophie Thackeray will be our third under 23. And I can't see who is going to beat Sophie. Emily Wadsworth, for me, didn't look like she had the form. She beat Sophie sometimes this season, but not all the time. And I think Emily is going to be looking focused towards the Worlds. I think that course suits Thackeray. And let's face it, she's going to have Yorkshire support, which is worth about 2,000 decibels of the venue. And she'll want to do that for the family and for Yorkshire as well as for herself. So, yeah, I'll go K. James Thackeray. Wadsworth's going to be there. Turnbull's going to be there. Lynn's going to be there, but it's those three for me.
I'll take Wadsworth in that place, because I really think that her ability this year And particularly given that if you look at her programme and how heavily she's been focused on Belgium and riding double weekends and training through those periods, it's got to be aiming for something, whether it's Worlds or whether it's national champs. But it would not be surprised if it's trying to, like you said, you've already mentioned, they're very good as a family of getting that stripy jumper.
Well, obviously, none of us have tipped many of the riders on the list. One of them that none of us have tipped who is on the list is Evie Richards, who you might be expecting us to tip. But actually, Evie is not going to be starting.
Knee injury. And she's going for surgery in a few days, unfortunately. So, we wish her the best, but disappointing for Evie, especially given that that takes her out of contention for the Worlds and therefore leaves her with only one more chance at winning another World title in under 23.
I am going to go for...
Do you know what? It's a good job you can't see his face on the podcast. This is the most lines on Neil's forehead I've ever seen in his life. And I've seen him struggling in France up some of the climbs. And do you know what? I've never seen him look so worried trying to pick a set of riders. Come on, Neil.
Yeah. That's because I am really worried because there's so many that I want to pick. I'm so torn between Wadsworth and Thackeray. That's the bottom line here. You know what? I'm going to go for... Wadsworth. My top three of the elite women was Bramier, Kay James. So
it's got to be Kay James.
Wadsworth. The other person on the list that I was actually surprised to see on the list is Emily Ashwood. She had a terrible crash at the Mountain Bike Nationals, and she's been hobbling around most of the season supporting her teammates with a broken leg.
Too soon to say she's going to be in the top three, but it will be good to see her back on the bike. Always somebody who it's great to see at the races, that's for sure.
So moving in then to the last race of the weekend, this is going to be intriguing as to what happens in this one, the Elite Men's Championship. Grant Ferguson, if you remember last year, it was a really close race with Grant, and so many riders up there, some of whom aren't even racing this year. But what's going to happen? Who is going to come out with that stripy jersey, of course, this time? We've got the under-23s in there as well. Who wants to go first? I think we may all have different views on this one.
Well, yeah, I'm going to mention a few riders around the outside.
Oh, God, that's cheating.
A few riders I think who are going to do really well initially, but maybe not going to be right up there at the end. I don't think we should discount Steve James, but I think Steve's got the beating of Grant Ferguson this year. But I don't think Steve is going to be in with a chance of a medal. I don't think you're going to see Lee Williams, the Welsh champion, multiple times in there. Gary McDonald, who's going well in Scotland. They're not going to be there. I don't think they've got the pace to get themselves right up there at the moment. I just don't think there's enough power, enough pace with these riders to get themselves in. However, I do think Nick Craig is going to put in a ride. He's going to be up there, and he's going to be just inside the top 10. I think people like Alex Forrester who are racing are going to get absolutely blatted, to be honest. Sorry, Alex. But I think once you put in riders like Graham Briggs in there, Briggs is going to have a good course for him. If anybody takes him to that tarmac, it's game over. But I don't think he's going to be in that group. I think it's going to be the year of the under-23s coming through. So in terms of predictions, it's not Cameron Mason who's taking the series. It's not Flynn. It's not Barnes. I think Pidcock won. I think he is for under 23 and for seniors. Pidcock won. Turner second. Same for the under 23s. And I think those two, if they don't wipe each other out on the course somewhere, are going to be clear of Ian Field. And immediately behind Ian will be Dan Tulip, which makes your third under 23. So my bet is Pidcock, Turner, Field, Tulip.
It's not fair because Matt started first and therefore it feels like I'm a copycat, but I could I agree. And I actually potentially think that Ben Turner might have the beating of Pidcock in a sprint. And the reason I say this is for one reason, yeah, is that he recently has had a track record of winning sprints against really talented riders, and he's only been but a smattering of seconds down on lap times on Pidcock. And then when I say a smattering, I mean he's been faster on some laps in DBVs than Pidcock has. So, you know, if you take that into contention, I just think they're going to be in a class of their own, to the point where I think that I will end up being pulled way faster than I would have ever been pulled in a trophy before. And obviously that is quite an unfortunate thing to think about. But I think we might only see the top 15 riders finish, because the speed of the front group will be so much faster than the top to anyone outside that top 25. I'm going to go for Pidcock. I'm going to go for Turner. And then I'm going to go for Field. Really, really. I don't want to be a copycat, but I think it's the most likely outcome.
And who will be the third under 23?
And the third under 23, I could see, because of the motivation of Cam Mason, I could see him pulling it out of the bag and actually usurping and going across. So I'm going to say Cam.
So I'm going to go Turner for the win. It could be. It's so close, but I think that Turner is more likely. It's more likely to go his way. Pidcock in either second or 20th.
I was going to say, if you don't have him for the win, is he going to finish?
Well, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah, I think he is an all or nothing type of rider. And then third is going to be Field. I just think he looks strong, and we know that he is a quality rider. In some ways, you know, he's got such a track record in the UK. It's easy to think, you know, he's been riding for UK teams, UK based teams, even though he's based himself over on the continent. It's easy almost to overlook the class and the quality of that rider. He is a quality rider. So I think that Field will be in third, and he's got something that he wants to gain. But of course, that means he doesn't get the national title and the national jersey, because that would go, in my prediction, to Ben Turner.
Yeah, I think you're right about Ian. He's an absolute class act. And it wouldn't surprise me if he beat both of them. It really wouldn't, because he will want it desperately. He's had it before. But he won't want that point to come when the two youngsters beat him. And that is a point for him to prove. I'm still king of the cop. I am still that man. I'm still the number one. And the three of them, to my knowledge, haven't raced together in the same race.
Yep.
And I think we're going to see a really good battle. I really do think Ian has the advantage. He's not hot favourite for probably the first time ever. I know he's going to want it back. And you've got to feel sorry for Grant Ferguson. I know Grant's had a lot of time off the bike, and he's trying to get his race legs back quick, but he's not potentially going to be in with the medal. I'd love him to pull it out, but I can't see it on the form he's in. Defending champion, not being able to make the cut and potentially not in there. What about under 23s, Neil?
My third, again, is I think Cam Mason could be the third. So I'm very similar to Bruce on that.
It was only a fall. It was only a slip of that front wheel between Cameron Mason and Dan Tulett, and Tulett's won more over the years. Mason's won plenty, but it's going to be tight. I just think that battle between them, we're going to be focusing on so many areas of the course at once, because there's going to be so many battles going on, and not least of which the battle to stay clear of the cutoff.
Of course, what I'm really hoping is that, based on what happened last weekend, what I'm really hoping is that, because I've not tipped him, then Toby Barnes is going to come up and get the under 23 title. Yeah, so yeah, which, yeah, it could happen. We could easily see a rider like that. We could see Turner and Pidcock wipe each other out. You know, have mechanicals. That can happen all the time. We see it at all levels. And then another rider who can hold their head and has got the firepower and the skills, someone like Barnes, could then come up, and it could be Field winning it, with Barnes in second, taking those two jerseys. But no, my prediction stands, though, as to where I think it's going to be.
But it's going to be interesting to watch. I'm looking forward to calling it on the mic for sure. Keyed up,
Done your last minute training?
Last minute training. I've got tomorrow I'm off. I'm doing a little bit of a road ride before work, and then Wednesday I'm luckily being able to take a little bit of time off, and I'm going to do a last training session with Graham over in Sherwood Pines, and then it'll be recovery and a massage, and then down we go. So,
well, as some of you may have seen on Twitter and on Instagram, I've got some maintenance to do. We got to. Finn was in a running top 10 and was in a there's a bit of a mini pile up on the second lap yesterday, so he, as a result of which he broke a chain, and I need to check through the rest of the bike, so we need to be doing a lot of maintenance this week. A few of us going down on Friday to pre-ride and coach on the course, and then Saturday it's all into the racing with Caroline. The whistle goes for her at 9:30 the following morning. We're not expecting her to get actually within 10 miles of the place until about 10 o'clock the night before, so that's going to be tricky.
There is a preview lap going to be in, courtesy of some class riders. Alec Briggs, Dan Tulett, Ben Tulett and Ian Field are out on the course on Tuesday, and the preview lap will be coming out from British Cycling, we think, on the Thursday before, so you will be able to see that lap before you get there, and it's going to be put together, we think, by the same team that are going to be doing the coverage, TV coverage, all of Sunday. So you'll be able to watch the action. If you're not able to get down to the venue, TV coverage on the internet on the Sunday. Prior to that, there's going to be a nice lap preview. Obviously not as insightful as our views on what's going to happen, because we're going to have Bruce on the course, and Neil and myself are going to be watching what's going on, and some exciting news of what we're going to be getting up to there as well.
Yeah, so we're planning on having some Facebook Live shows going out on Facebook, so you need to follow, like, tick all of those things you have to do on Facebook, and then you can watch the show that we will put out live, and then of course you'll be able to re-watch it and get our thoughts on the course for all of the latest information. What we're expecting to do is that we will do three main shows basically after each day's action, so after the practice, after the day one, and after day two. So do tune in to each of those. It will give a very different feel, I think, to what we're seeing on the coverage on the red button. So it will give you that crosscast feel for what we're doing.
Yep, definitely. It's going to be really exciting. We're going to watch all of the racing, all the action, run back in, and then we'll bring you the views, the previews. Bruce is going to be going around thinking about just how he's going to describe this course from being on two wheels. I'll have all of the action there. I'll be no doubt looking my usual dishevelled post-event self, and Neil will be looking as dapper as ever and holding all of the shows together. We're hoping to get some really great guests for you on the way through as well. Now, some insightful interviews. You never know, we may see a stripy jersey or two in the shows on the way through, so it'd be great to have you tune in, catch up with us, and we will make sure we've got it down and available. If you can't do it on the day, if you're going to go down on the day, see what we thought of the racing that you've been watching if you've been down at Gravesend. It's going to be a really great venue. Make sure you get down early. Make sure you have a read of all of the information that's coming up on the websites as well, because that are very specific national championship rules, particularly if you're riding specific rules and timescales. It's not the same as any other weekend in the year, so we hope to see everybody there. We are going to have some exciting racing there.
So we're looking forward to seeing you all this weekend and saying hello on Facebook Live. So where can we find you on the internet, Matt?
I'm going to be on Facebook, on Twitter at Matt Fixapain.
Bruce. You can find me on all the social at Bruce Dalton CX, and I'll be doing some stuff on Instagram with some live stuff as well, and behind the scenes on stories.
So you can find me at Crosscast Neil on Twitter primarily. I do put a few things up on Instagram, and of course you can follow us at The Crosscast on Twitter. Really looking forward to this weekend. It's the highlight of the year. It's going to be great fun. Most of all, I'm looking forward to seeing you all on the other side of the tape. Bye.